Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday morning. Both presidential candidates addressed environmental issues at last night's presidential debate, specifically climate change and green jobs. We'll be talking about their responses to the question about environmental issues this hour of the program, and also looking at some very interesting decisions that the next president will have to face. And our guest says it will be early in the administration. The first synthetic organism is due for production in the United States, and there will be other challenges in the fields of nanotechnology and genetics, and it brings up just a whole lot of questions. Josh McDaniel will be joining us momentarily, environmental writer who's the author of a piece in the September-October issue of E, the environmental magazine, and we'll talk about science and the next administration. And also we'll be looking at that very disturbing report, which I'm sure you saw images of this, which almost make you cry. In the last couple days, conservationists have taken the – well, not in the last couple days, but the report came out in the last couple days that shows that a bleak picture of the global status of mammals worldwide. And this is from the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. The spokesperson from that organization says that we estimate that one in four species is threatened with extinction and that the population of one in two is declining. Obviously, that has something to do with global warming, and we'll be talking about that and many other very pressing environmental issues in just a moment. Joining me in the studio is Rhonda Fanning. It is our fall membership drive, and we're here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Make your pledge of support at WPR.org or call toll-free 888-202-2552. Hello again, Rhonda.
Good morning, Kathleen. I want to thank everyone last hour who called to pledge, and I also want to encourage people to pledge this hour. We have a goal of $9,000, and meeting that goal will help make this program possible in the months to come. So won't you be the first to donate, and let's get us started this hour. Make your pledge now online at WPR.org, or you can call toll-free 888-202-2552.
And for those of you who subscribe to us, you will also receive a one-year subscription for $120 to E, the environmental magazine. We've had a lot of great shows with guests from this magazine. They do a superb job of covering environmental issues, which are extremely important to our audience. Well, not just to our audience, but to everybody living on Earth. So you will receive this magazine for a pledge of $120 this hour only.
That's right. As Kathleen said, we have had writers, contributors, editors from E! Environmental Magazine on our show several times in the past. We've talked about things such as the livestock industry and their effect on global warming, the immigration debate, and how there are a lot of immigrants who are fleeing from environmentally ravaged areas and how that's going to affect climate change. We've talked about bottled water. We've talked about the warming of the weather and, you know, losing winter. We've talked about green jobs, the green economy, green building. And a lot of those issues are covered in this magazine in each issue, really. It appeals to all age groups. They have things in there about greening, you know, colleges, green jobs, how you find them, and what are the options out there. So pledge your support this hour at 888-202-2552, or you can log on at WPR.org and pledge on our website.
You sure can. A contribution of any amount makes you a member. A contribution of $120 will be happy to send you a subscription for a year to E! The Environmental Magazine. So think about how much you can give to Wisconsin Public Radio, how much it is worth to you, and I know it's priceless to many of you, and then make your pledge of support securely online at WPR.org or call us toll-free at 888-202-2552.
Support this intelligent source of news and information that you get day in and day out on Wisconsin Public Radio by joining online now at WPR.org. Put your contribution to work right away by making your pledge with your credit card. It takes just a moment of your time, and you'll be investing in a service that keeps you informed each and every day.
Rhonda and I try to be as timely as possible when choosing topics and guests, and our show has attracted many loyal listeners who want to hear in-depth discussions that go beyond the headlines.
That's right. And each Monday morning, the Kathleen's All Things Political show has has certainly got a lot of fans out there. We start getting calls around 8:30 for people who want to talk. They've just been itching all weekend to talk politics with Kathleen on Monday morning. So pledge your support to this so we can keep bringing you this kind of programming. Log on WPR.org or you can call toll-free at 888-202-2552.
Thanks very much, Rhonda. Thanks for all you do, and thanks, everybody, for your pledge of support. And we know that you'll be pledging to us during the course of the next hour. There's a very interesting article in E! The Environmental Magazine for the September-October issue written by Josh McDaniel, who's an environmental writer living in Colorado. And it's titled Science Lessons, Bush Made an Enemy of Scientists. The next president needs them to help set a new course for American exploration. We'll be welcoming phone calls on air for our guest, Josh. And the number here is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Josh, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's great to be here, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. You just say early in the article, and I'm not even sure what form this takes, that early in the administration of the next president, the first synthetic organism is due for production in the United States. What is that?
Well, it's Dr. Craig Venter. He was the scientist that was first to decode the human genome, and he's been working to create this synthetic organism. Mainly what he's been trying to do is synthesize DNA and then inject it into bacterium, so to creating sort of a new synthetic bacteria. And his primary goal is to create an organism that could be eventually used to create biofuels. And they say they're about the announcement that they're successful in that is going to come pretty much any day now, really. I think that there should be in the next few months, we should be hearing that they've actually successfully created this organism.
And that could have profound ramifications, couldn't it?
Oh, sure. I mean, well, first it's just that once that is done, then there's all sorts of applications you could see for creating these sort of custom-made genetic robots, as some people refer to them, for biofuels, for delivering medicines, for cleaning up pollution, lots of different applications for it. So yeah, there's going to be, in the next 5 or 10 years, you're going to start hearing a lot about these types of developments.
And tell me, who is working on this, and do they work with the aid of government money in some way?
Yes. I mean, there is some federal funds going into some of these labs, but a lot of it is privately funded. There's a lot of investment in this. I mean, nanotech and biogenetics are probably some of the largest growth investment fields out there. So a lot of these labs are almost completely privately funded.
You also talk about challenges in the field of nanotechnology and genetics. Sometimes I hear about what nanotechnology is doing, and it's like trying to fathom space and the possibility of life elsewhere. It is so phenomenal. It's amazing
right.
The human mind can work in that field.
Right. I mean, you know, the scientific version of nanotech, sort of little miniature robots that do things is probably a little ways off, but there are lots of nanotech products that are coming on the market now. Carbon nanotubes are going into lots of different products, anything from bicycle frames to tennis rackets and that sort of thing. And people aren't real sure how those things react in the environment when they start breaking down, because they really haven't started breaking down yet. And so there hasn't been a lot of research done on what this sort of avalanche of nanotech that's coming out now is going to eventually, what are the impacts of that going to be?
And what are the worries?
Well, one of the things with carbon nanotech fibers, there's been some researchers, and there hasn't been good studies on this. There has been one study, but it sort of looks at possible implications of carbon fibers, that it could react like asbestos. So it's these tiny minuscule little fibers, and we just aren't real sure how human or other organisms respond to ingesting these things. And as they start to break down, we're going to be finding out. And so getting ahead of the curve a little bit in terms of the research on the impacts and then getting the regulatory agencies to sort of catch up with this is going to be a big priority for the next president.
Right.
A lot of people think, yeah.
Do we have those regulatory agencies in place? Are they working now on the ramifications of that?
Well, there are groups that are trying to develop there are people that are looking at it. There's lots of interest in even in the nanotech and biogenetic world. They are interested because they know that it's coming, and so they're trying to sort of help some of the agencies regulate them. And so right now, a lot of the regulatory aspects come from within the industry itself, which, as we've learned in the past few weeks, might not be such a good idea. But they are trying to catch up. But really, it's the research is outstripping the research on the impact side. The research on development is much farther along than the research on the long-term impact.
Mm-hmm. The title of your piece in the magazine is the subtitle is Bush Made an Enemy of Scientists. The next president needs them to help set a new course for American exploration. How did President Bush make an enemy of scientists?
Well, there's been there's a widespread perception in the scientific community, and then lots of stories and evidence of suppression of science. There was a lot of rewriting of climate science, mm-hmm. By administration officials. There's some famous cases of within the Fish and Wildlife Service of suppressing evidence about impacts on endangered species. There's the case of James Hansen, the climate scientist, where he's been really crying out for this sort of the administration distortion or just outright suppression of evidence about climate change. So there's been stories from all of the agencies that political appointees at higher levels are not allowing either science to come to the forefront for decision making, or actively going in and changing scientific results.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, the Union of Concerned Scientists did a survey of government scientists a while back and found overwhelming lack of morale among the government scientific corps, and a group that's really looking for some new leadership and sort of a new relationship with the executive branch.
You mentioned in the article President Bush's refusal to fund research on stem cells that for philosophical reasons here, for what he would say would be moral reasons. But also there are many federal scientists who are working in EPA and other agencies and major research institutions that haven't had a lot of money. A couple questions here is, can you imagine that the next president is going to have any money, considering what's going on here in the world, to move ahead to do, A, more regulation, and B, to put more money into all of these agencies so we can benefit from scientific discoveries?
Right, yeah. I mean, that's sort of the question that I think that we've been dealing with, and looking at the presidential candidates for the last couple of weeks, is there hasn't been, there was a little bit last night, I guess, but
yes.
There hasn't been a lot of, okay, so what does the financial crisis mean to all these programs that you've proposed? And Senator Obama has proposed doubling research funding, and Senator McCain has expressed support for expanding research funding, but he hasn't really come right out and said, I'm going to double research funding, or set any sort of targets for that. So getting to how we're going to be able to double research funding is sort of the next question for the candidates.
You also talk, and what a sobering thought this is, Josh, if the efforts to curb CO2 emissions prove to be too little too late, which is definitely a possibility considering what we're hearing about what's happening at the Arctic and animals who are supposed to live in the Arctic Ocean showing up in Florida, for heaven's sake, or dying. The idea of building massive seawalls to the idea of dumping iron into the oceans to encourage the growth of plankton and the absorption of CO2. Who's given us those kinds of ideas? We haven't heard that at all, and that's fairly dramatic.
Well, that isn't something that's come to the forefront yet, but there is, there are people that are looking at, okay, what happens if, our present efforts at cutting emissions, which haven't been going along too well, what if even what we're trying to propose, what if that doesn't work?
Mm-hmm.
Where are we? What are we going to have to do? And, if global cycles start breaking down, there's going to be some very large-scale experiments, and some of the things that are thrown out there sound a little crazy, but, hopefully it wouldn't come to that. But if what we're doing doesn't work, then the next president, or possibly presidents of a few more administrations down the road, are going to have to deal with making some unthinkable decisions about types of things they'd have to try.
And it's unthinkable that we have to even think about this, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is. Let's welcome phone calls for our guest. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our guest is Josh McDaniel. And his very provocative and informative piece is Presidential Science Lessons, Bush Made an Enemy of Scientists, the Next President Needs Them to Help Set a New Course for American Exploration. And this magazine, we want to let you know, is our gift to you for those who pledge at the $120 level. And it's E, the Environmental Magazine. So please call with your pledge during this hour and you'll be really on top of a lot of environmental issues in quite a bit of depth, and issues that, as you've heard even in the few minutes that we've had to converse with Josh, need to be a part of the national discussion. Our pledge number is 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552, or you can go online, and that's WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. To your phone calls in a moment, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Josh McDaniel is our guest. His piece is in the current issue of E, the Environmental Magazine. He is an environmental writer who's living in Colorado. And we start our calls with Mike from Milwaukee. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to ask your guest, you mentioned these synthetic organisms. What type of, if you could comment on, if there are any control factors built into them to kind of counter the effects of evolution and mutation, because these things might evolve into something harmless, but they may evolve into something very harmful. And I'll,
right,
I'll take my response.
Okay. Thanks very much, Mike.
The person I'm familiar with the most who's discussed that is Craig Venter, and he does say that, you know, they, in the genetic coding, and I'm not a geneticist by any stretch, so I might start butchering the technical aspects of this, but in the genetic coding they're putting in there, they've made it where these organisms aren't self-replicating, and that there isn't a chance for the types of mutations that sort of create the sort of disaster scenarios. That being said, right now we're relying on the labs to do that, and since the our regulatory agencies aren't really up to the task right now of deciding whether they are accomplishing that or not, then, you know, it leaves a lot of questions. And the next president is really going to have to address these by ramping up the ability of groups like the Food and Drug Administration, the EPA, to be able to handle these types of questions. How are these products and how are these organisms going to be regulated? So far, the research is just so far ahead of where our understanding of what the impacts could be that the regulatory agencies are, you know, light years behind.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. Let's respond a little bit to the presidential candidates' questions. It was question number 7, may indicating where everybody decided to put this, and maybe it should be higher, on environmental issues, climate change and green jobs. What were your thoughts about both candidates' response? At least they both talked about the fact that they felt this was an important issue.
Yeah, I was actually I was surprised at how much of attention that it got last night, and I was encouraged by that both listed it, energy, developing a sane energy policy as a priority in the next administration. They link it to national security, which is something I think that is interesting in the way that they're framing the issue. So instead of talking about, there wasn't a lot of discussion of climate change or global warming, but it was more about clean fuels, energy independence, and getting U.S. independent from foreign oil, but then, you know, sort of looking at energy as a national security issue, which I think that's a great way of looking at it. But it's interesting that that's the take. And so it's sort of this you know, a patriotic call to energy and to a different approach to energy, which was interesting.
Mm-hmm. And what are your thoughts about how rapidly we'll proceed with green technology during the next presidential administration, whoever is in office, Josh?
Well, I think, I mean, I think with either administration, that's going to be a vast improvement. Senator Obama definitely has the more clear goals and targets that he's setting, and he is much more open to an aggressive government approach to investing in renewable energy and clean fuel technology. Senator McCain is much more favors much more market-based approaches. He has talked a lot about favoring renewable energy in the past, and he, if you hear him in the debates, he supports it. He discusses wind and solar a lot, but his voting record, Senator Obama was correct. I mean, John McCain has not been, he does not really believe in subsidies for some of the alternative fuels, wind and solar. He is in favor of voting for subsidies for nuclear and clean coal. So I think that Obama, or another thing too, Senator Obama's proposed a program where he's going to invest $15 billion a year over 10 years for renewable energy. And Senator McCain hasn't come out with any sort of long-term projects along those lines. Most of his is relying on market-based development of renewable energy.
And McCain, they're both in favor of nuclear power, but McCain, nuclear power plants, McCain made a statement last night that we need to build a lot of them right away. And Obama's a little bit more reserved about how we proceed with this, looking at spent fuel and what we do with it and making sure all of it is pretty safe. What are your thoughts about this when we look at the next administration? Do we need more nuclear power plants? Is safety still an issue here? Have the candidates addressed this issue?
Yeah, it was sort of interesting. Senator McCain sort of dismissed Senator Obama's concerns about safety with nuclear plants. I just thought probably wasn't the most politically wise way to approach nuclear power. I think that, you know, there's my opinion and there's what the candidates think, which is probably more important. But I think Senator McCain views nuclear power as the way to sort of, in the short term at least, to get the switch off of fossil fuels going, where Senator Obama sees it as a smaller part of a wider portfolio of energy options. I think there's still, you know, there's some analysts that say that nuclear, the type of building of nuclear plants that Senator McCain wants could never occur without a massive shift in how we approach nuclear power. So right now, local governments and state governments have a lot of control over siting of nuclear plants. And to get 45 new nuclear plants built immediately, or 100, which is, Senator McCain has proposed, would be really extremely difficult and expensive. And so if Senator McCain is elected, I think we'll definitely see much more emphasis on nuclear power, but I don't think that he would be able to build as many plants as he would like.
Anita from Gurnee is next. Hi, Anita.
Hi.
Hi.
This is a great program. I'm wondering if your guest would be able to comment and give us more detail than has been in the media, really. It seems about 2 years ago that the Bush administration really slashed funding for NIH, National Institute of Health Research. And, you know, that really affects grants that filter out to all of the research facilities across the United States. I would just like to see if we can get some more information about that. And because I feel that the new candidate, if it is Obama, he says he's going to double research funding, well, it would seem to me that he would be having to also, you know, make up for the deficit due to that slashing.
Thank you,
yeah,
Anita.
I mean, a lot of the research agencies have either just seen their budgets held steady, which is essentially a decline with inflation, or there's been actual cuts. And so a lot of those agencies are really hurting, and there's research programs that are just disappearing left and right. And so I would suggest you, if you get a chance, go to the Union of Concerned Scientists website, and they have and take a look at the survey where they did. And this is of, I forgot the number, but they a few thousand government scientists and asked them lots of questions about funding, about suppression of science, about sort of what they are looking for in terms of the next president and leadership in science. And funding is a big part of that. I mean, if they don't have the funds, the programs that they want to implement and the programs they think they're needed just aren't going to be there. I think that trying to figure out which of these programs to fund and which not with the financial crisis we're in is going to be a big question. We haven't heard which ones they're going to prioritize yet. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think that's one thing it would be nice to get some answers on as to what specific research programs do the candidates think that are needed for the next, say, 10 years, next decade, or next 20 years.
Josh McDaniel is our guest this hour. He's an environmental writer, lives in Colorado, and has written a very interesting piece in the current issue of E! The Environmental Magazine, Presidential Science Lessons, Bush Made an Enemy of Scientists, The Next President Needs Them to Help Set a New Course for American Exploration. And he comes, the article is filled with information about things that we probably haven't thought about because they've not been part of the national focus, looking at what's going to happen in lots of different fields, nanotechnology, the first synthetic organism, and what it means for the environment and how we regulate it and what are its promises and all of that. It's a fascinating article. And we will continue taking your phone calls. Anita, thanks for yours. Our on-air number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Joining me in the studio now is the producer of the program, Rhonda Fanning, and we are here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's easy to make a donation, and it's a special incentive to make a donation this hour. Go online at WPR.org or call toll-free 888-202-2552. Hi again, Rhonda.
Hi, Kathleen. That's right. We have a goal of $9,000 this hour, and we are about $7,600 short, but there's plenty of time left in the hour to call and pledge your support. And for that $120 level, you will keep this conversation going for the next year with a year subscription to E! Environmental Magazine.
Mm-hmm. And that's a wonderful resource. I love it when we talk about things that I've never talked about before. And one of these is this whole idea of the first synthetic organism, which I must confess is pretty new to me, but I learn new things all the time on the air. And it's fascinating to know where that's going to go with the next administration, what it means for all of us. I love learning things like this, and I'm sure that many of you do too. So it's a very special pledge this hour for thank you for your listening to us and contributing on air to our discussions every single day. You hear all kinds of points of view. I love these science shows as well. And all you have to do is call. And here's what you call. 888-202-2552. 888-202-2552. Or pledge online easily at WPR.org.
That's right. This hour only, for a pledge of $120, you're not only going to get that member benefit card, but you're also going to get a subscription of E! Environmental Magazine. And we have guests from E! On, I would say, every couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
And won't it be nifty the next time you hear a guest on? You can just pick up your magazine and, you know, read along at home while you're listening to Kathleen, and call up the author. And, you know, if you have a question that you didn't think it got answered in the article, you're going to be the first to call and ask that question. But first, call and pledge your support at 888-202-2552 or log on at WPR.org.
And again, we have a goal of $9,000 this hour. As Rhonda has told you, we're at $1,405 right now. But it's a special hour because we talk about how it's lifelong learning here, but it is lifelong learning. And you get this magazine and we'll be able to really be on top of environmental issues. And now is the time to be on top of environmental issues. There are many of them. We have yet to talk. And a lot of the news isn't good. I understand that. But there's always hope, and some of these new technologies are quite promising. So please call, support us, support these kinds of discussions. And I guarantee you, this kind of conversation, you're not even having at a national level, which, you know, we should. So 888-202-2552 is the number to call.
Help us reach that goal this hour of $9,000. Call at that $120 level and get the subscription, a year subscription to E! Environmental Magazine. It's only going to take a few minutes either way, via phone or via our website, WPR.org, or toll-free at 888-202-2552. 2552.
Thanks very much, Rhonda. Thanks. We'll continue our phone calls now with our guest, Josh McDaniel, and he has written a great article in the current issue of E! Environmental Magazine that looks at what the next president is going to face in terms of money in the budget for science, in terms of regulation, in terms of our planet and the animals on our planet, and just really crucial issues that perhaps have not been discussed as much as they should be. We go to Kiri, is it, from West Bend. Hi, Kiri.
Hi. Hi, Kathleen. And hi, Mr. McDaniel. I just wanted to know if you could make a comment on the nanotechnology and how it will affect our human selves, because I've done some reading in it. Seems that our body's immune systems do not recognize the nanoparticles since they are so small, and once they're in the body, our body has no way of eradicating them. And I've read a study that they've done on fish where a fish had suffered brain damage from ingestion of nanoparticles, and I was just wondering if you could make some comments on that, please.
Yeah, right now, from what I've read, there haven't been really good studies on the effects of nanoparticles, and I'm sure it depends on which nanoparticle that is being, is under discussion. The one that there is the most concern about is carbon nanofibers because of their shape. It's very similar to asbestos. It's sort of a fiber-like product. At the molecular level, it's a fiber. And as these things start to break down, they're going to be, going into the water supply. They're going to be going into the soil. And so animals are going to be ingesting these. The problem is they haven't started breaking down yet. I mean, they've only been, under production for, say, 10 years or so, or maybe a little more than 10 years. So we're not real sure how, just from observation, we're not sure how they act. In terms of research, the research hasn't progressed that much in terms of how there's been so much on the sort of the development side that people just don't really know how these things respond in the human body or in any other organism's body. Just intuitively, it seems a little scary.
Right.
In terms of little particles that aren't found in nature, all of a sudden being ingested into systems that aren't adapted to them, there's huge potential for problems. Yeah. So it's one of those things that's going to, and another, I hate to keep bringing up the nightmare scenarios, but as we're going into large-scale production of these products, if there is any sort of accident at the facilities where they're produced, it could create large-scale problems in a, confined area immediate instead of these more long-term sort of the slow drip type problems that they're used to from environmental problems of things building up in the system. So there's a tremendous need to get on top of these issues. And, the one caller discussed where the different agencies having their funding cut. Well, this probably isn't the time to be cutting funding for regulatory agencies that are looking at these problems. This is probably the time to really be expanding the ability of these agencies to deal with these problems, because it's going to be something that this isn't way down the road. This is 3 years down the road.
Mm. I need to have you comment, too, on this big news that came this week, and it was accompanied by these pictures that make you cry of penguins who find the water not cold enough and they're way off course, and seals winding up who ought to be living in the Arctic Ocean are winding up in Florida. And then this report that comes that we're looking at a loss of a huge number of the world's mammals within our lifetime. Hundreds of species could be lost as a result of our actions. It's the first detailed look at the world's mammals in more than a decade. The news on that front certainly isn't very good. How does the next president deal with that issue, and why should we care about this one?
Yeah, I haven't read the original report. I've just read some of the news reports on it. But, just some of the basic numbers that are thrown out there are just overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
That one in two mammal populations is in decline.
Right.
The primary, climate change is obviously playing an important part of that, but habitat loss is what is listed as the main driver of this. And then a lot of that is happening in tropical countries where most of the species are located. So, I don't know how a president would would address that issue is that's something I haven't thought about as much yet. But, you know, I think climate change is going to be driving a lot of this. And so getting a president to take a leadership role on climate change is going to be an important step in that direction. Obviously, these are really alarming numbers, so it's going to take probably a lot more than just our president working on these issues. It's going to be an international effort to try to address this.
Kerry, thanks very much for your call. Jim from Peshtigo is next. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Last night, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Last night, McCain mentioned that he was that there was the waste in different countries was being recycled or reused. Do you know anything about that?
I don't remember that.
The nuclear waste.
The spent nuclear fuel.
Yeah, the spent rods, and he said that's not a problem anymore because there's three countries, I think he mentioned, that are or three areas that were using some different technology, and the waste wasn't a problem, which I think that's the major problem with nuclear is what do we do with this waste that lasts for thousands of years?
Yeah, I guess I didn't catch that part during the debate, and I'm not as familiar with nuclear technology I have heard that there are lots of experience with reusing nuclear waste material, and that's sort of one of the main paths that they're looking at in terms of dealing with waste, so getting it down to as small amount of quantities as possible by continually reusing it. Everything I've read, though, says that the problem of waste and dealing with waste is at the same place it was 20, 30 years ago. It's just one of those, almost deal breakers with nuclear power that we just have not figured out how to deal with it. And while it's promising that there might be some ideas coming out, and I hope they do, because if nuclear power could become safe and if the waste issue could be dealt with, I mean, it has tremendous potential to help with the problem, I think, at least, and I think the candidates do as well. It's interesting to note, though, for as much as Senator McCain has promoted nuclear power, he has also said that he was against allowing nuclear waste to travel through the state of Arizona to get to Nevada, to the Yucca Mountain site. So everybody, it's good to talk. Everybody likes to talk about nuclear power in the abstract, but when it's talked about, putting it right next to your house or in your community or even in your city or state, people have a little bit different take on nuclear power usually.
Thanks very much for the call. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking this hour about science issues that will face, important issues that will face the next president of the United States. Josh McDaniel is our guest, and he's author of a very interesting piece in E! The Environmental Magazine for September, October of 2008, and we're welcoming phone calls for him. Thanks very much for your call, Jim. Our number is 800-486-8655. You point to this, and we talked in an earlier show about the scientific debate that never took place, really, between these two candidates. But you also make this point that there have been very few questions directly related to science during the primary debates or in TV news interviews. The League of Conservation Voters analyzing the transcripts of the major debates and interviews and found that out of 3,302 questions asked of the candidates, only 8 of them mentioned global warming. Isn't that something?
Yeah, that study came out a little earlier, more during the primary season. And, it depends on what exact phrase you're looking for in terms of what they're asking for. But, yeah, there's been none of the candidates like to talk about climate change or global warming much. Every once in a while they'll mention it, but normally if they do, they immediately pivot to energy independence. And so I think both Senator Obama and Senator McCain take climate change seriously, but they know that to really get Americans behind what they want to do, they have to frame it differently. And so you see that it shifts to this more getting us off foreign oil discussion. Reducing prices or the people hurting at the pump sort of discussion. So that climate change itself isn't what they want to talk about, even though that's what they're essentially dealing with. That has changed a bit. You know, I think as the summer has gone on and the oil prices went up, there's been a much more discussion of relatively substantial discussion of the different options for how we're going to approach energy policy in the future. And so it's even though the questions aren't dealing with science or climate change specifically, they're starting to get into it a bit, into the margins of it, I guess. But yeah, science hasn't been an issue hardly at all. Besides climate change, the only other issue that it pops up really is stem cells. So.
Mm-hmm. And a little bit about science education that we need to spend more and be more competitive globally. Mary from Shorewood, hi.
Greetings. Oh, I have thanks so much for this incredible program. I have an idea for promoting solar power. What would happen if schools all across the country were to do as part of their science and technology and shop classes and everything, work together to build solar panels on the roofs of these massive buildings? You know, I saw a wonderful program on PBS the other night on the Barefoot University. I believe it was Northern India, where they were teaching women to build solar panels and all about the solar industry, and gosh, we could do so much, and that would be such a fantastic learning experience with just great practical results. And I'll take your response off.
Great.
There.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I think, I think that we're going to see, I think there's sort of this, I think we've reached this point where you're going to start seeing this, and, all of the entrepreneurs and all of the sort of the energy and the passion in some of younger generations is going to start being directed towards this challenge, which is going to be the challenge for the next few generations, is how to deal with this problem of energy and climate change. And so having the leadership now to get this started by doing things like you're talking about, revolving education programs around dealing with this challenge is what we need. I think and that's why I thought it was interesting, the national security take on how they're approaching energy policy, because that's what we need. We need the same sort of commitment to national defense and to national security. We need to apply that same level of, funding and passion and commitment and attention to this challenge. And, not only will it take programs in our schools, but it's going to take funding on large, large levels in the same way that we fund our military and we defund all other aspects of national security. So, I'm really hoping that the candidates will follow up this framing of an issue as a national security issue with action that elevates it to that level.
Yeah. Let's go next to Jay from Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Jay.
Hi.
Hi.
Say, I have a question.
All right.
Hello.
Yeah, we hear you.
Okay. I just have a question on the breeder reactor for the nuclear power plants. I can remember back.
Are you there, Jay?
Yes, I'm here. I was just wondering if he knows anything about the breeder reactor as far as recycling all the waste.
Yeah, we could touch on that just a little bit. Do you want to expound on that, Josh?
No, I'm not. In terms of recycling waste, I'm vaguely familiar that there are some efforts that are going on in trying to recycle waste, but I don't think that they're not at the level yet that the problem is on the path to be solved, I think. But.
Mm-hmm. Josh, thank you so much for being with us. Thanks for the most informative, interesting article that makes us think about things that we didn't even know existed. thank you.
Well, thanks for having me. It was great being here.
Josh McDaniel, the piece is in the current issue, the September-October issue of E! The Environmental Magazine, Presidential Science Lessons, Bush Made an Enemy of Scientists, and the Next President Needs Them to Help Set a New Course for American Exploration. For those of you who call with your pledge of support, we're happy to send you a year subscription to this magazine for $120 pledge, and the number to call is 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552. Joining me in the studio is the producer of this program, Rhonda Fanning. And hello again, Rhonda.
Good morning, Kathleen. What a deal. $120 this hour is going to get you that Wisconsin Public Radio membership card, which can pay for itself pretty quickly, a couple of dinners, a night stay in a bed and breakfast or perhaps a concert or two. And you also get a year's subscription of E-Environmental Magazine. That's 6 issues. A lot of information, things that we cover here each and every day. Keep that conversation going for another year by pledging your support. We have a $9,000 goal this hour, and we have about 8,000, or I'm sorry, 7,000 left to raise this hour. So it's completely doable. We need your help. Call now, 888-202-2552, or you can log on to our secure website at WPR.org. Couple of clicks and you are done.
Again, it's a special incentive, $120, and you can receive the Environmental Magazine, which I'm sure you're going to enjoy. I love it when we talk about brand new issues and issues that we need to think about and some of us have never heard about. And this magazine covers those kinds of issues and points attention to areas of concern that we need to be concerned about. So it's important. Please call with your pledge of support for these conversations, 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552.
That's right. This show is just very indicative of the caliber of guests that we have on Wisconsin Public Radio and the myriad of topics just on the environmental front and with E-Environmental Magazine. We've looked at the livestock industry. We've looked at bottled water, global warming, the green economy, green building, each and every day on Wisconsin Public Radio. But we need your support to keep this going. So call now, 888-202-2552, or log on to WPR.org.
And you know that we pledge to bring you great programming every day. I love it when people call and say, I love this program. The woman who had a suggestion for solar energy. We love hearing from you and that you love the fact that these issues are brought to your attention. Call, please, 888-202-2552.
I've listened all over the country, you know, traveling, you try to find the public stations. What we have is so wonderful, and I don't think a lot of people realize it. And it is, for many people, I think it's they can't get out, but they can find out what's going on by turning on the radio. I'm John Ink from Wausau, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for education and information. It comes to you. You don't have to go hunt it down.
And if you'd like to ask yourself the question, how do you know if Wisconsin Public Radio is important to you? Would you miss it if it were gone? What's that country song? How can you miss me when I'm not even gone? We're not gone, but if we were gone, I'm sure that you would miss
fan,
it.
But
my husband always says that line for some reason. I'm not really a country fan, but I just remember. Sometimes country has good lines, right?
Yeah, I guess.
How can you miss me when I'm not even gone? But, you know, you would miss us. You would miss us, right? We're not going anywhere, but if your answer was yes, it says a lot. It means you're a fan of Wisconsin Public Radio and you rely on WPR and that WPR is worth your pledge of support.
That's right. And we happen to be in our fall membership drive right now. So this is your chance to support the programming you enjoy each day, to support the service that's important to you. Just go online to WPR.org or call toll-free 888-202-2552.
Listeners who rely on Wisconsin Public Radio are really the most dependable source of income for our station. Pledge online. Again, just a reminder that for this hour, our thank you to you is E, the Environmental Magazine, for a $120 pledge, and you'll receive information on issues that we should all know about and care about. WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Perhaps you can make a donation at a little higher level, perhaps a $1,000 contribution. That $1,000 makes this service available to everyone. They help us stay strong and continue to grow with a leadership contribution. Pledge online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
You know, instead of putting the money in the backyard, as some people have suggested the last few weeks, you could send it our way.
That's
because
true.
Because we'll use it wisely and carefully. We really will. And you'll feel good that you turn on the radio. Every time you turn on the radio after you've made a pledge, it's a different kind of relationship. You will, of course, have the satisfaction of knowing that you helped to make this service possible.
That's right. Wisconsin Public Radio is listener-supported. An important part of our budget comes from listeners just like you. So pledge online now at WPR.org or toll-free at 888-202-2552.
We're at $2,425. We'd like to get to $9,000, which we could do if you keep calling, and we're sure that you will. Every dollar makes a difference. Every gift matters. $60 here, $120 there, an occasional $1,000 contribution. We've had that. It comes from individual donations from thousands of listeners just like you, and you make up the largest share of our budget.
That's right. It's easy to take Wisconsin Public Radio for granted. Let's put an end to that right now, this hour. Help us make that $9,000 goal. We're getting close, and you can pledge through the news. Again, $120 level pledge this hour is going to get you a year subscription to E-Environmental Magazine, and we can keep this conversation going for yet another year.
Help us reach our goal right now. Just go online again at WPR.org or call toll-free 888-202-2552.
That's right. Again, that phone number is 888-202-2552, or you can go online at WPR.org and you can keep pledging through the news.
You sure can.
All right.
Thanks, Rhonda. Thanks for producing the program and for all of your help. And thanks to Katie Madsen for on-air production here. Thanks for your pledges, everybody. We really need you and we appreciate you deeply. We appreciate your great thoughts and right now we appreciate your money. So thanks. Call and pledge. Thank you. And we're giving you that terrific gift this hour, too, for $120 pledge. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We have news coming up and many more hours of great programming. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 9 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.